This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Talk of death and spirits is in the air this week, more than most other times of the year. On Monday, many of us donned our ghost and goblin costumes to celebrate Halloween. And yesterday, others around the world gathered for festivals and celebrations to mark the first day of a Mexican holiday called Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. But talking openly about death and dying is usually taboo. And while all of us experience grief and illness and, of course, at some point death, we don't like to talk about it. This weekend, a group of folks around the state are gathering for an event that aims to break the silence around death. It's called a Death Fair. It's a day-long event in Pittsburgh with workshops, activities, music, and food that tackles a wide range of topics related to death, dying, and funerals. And I'm joined first by organizer Tammy Schwerin. Tammy is here on the State of Things again. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Good to see you, Frank.
You had been talking and thinking about this topic when you experienced a personal tragedy in your life, the loss of your son. Tell us how those things came together for you.
Yeah, so I'm the executive director of Abundance NC, and we work on community resilience. And we had a volunteer that was coming to visit, and her husband was diagnosed with ALS. And so we started putting on a workshop around death, and the workshop filled up 150 people, standing room only. And we started doing Death and Cupcakes, which is a smaller group of folks that get together. And so we were exploring it because, you know, a lot of people have had loss. And personally, I'd had a small bit of loss, but nothing huge. And we were attempting to figure out what to do with Chris, the fellow that was dying of ALS. We were actually building a graveyard at my home for him when the very night we were talking about that, my husband and I had a knock on the door from the sheriff that my son had died from smoking heroin in Boulder, Colorado. And so immediately I was put to work and had already been doing the work. And what we experienced was an outpouring of community support. My husband and I were in complete shock, and our family was, you know, obviously destroyed. And we just asked what we wanted, and the community provided. We had a wake that was 7 days long at our house. We had, you know, people spending the night. It was kind of a huge party of sadness and celebration and an unbelievable amount of food, and people were sleeping there. And for 7 days, we had probably 600 people come to a service to honor my son, Zafer. And we did it the way Zafer would have wanted and the way we wanted, and which is kind of a little alternative. My husband and I do a little bit of, you know, outside-the-box stuff with biodiesel and local food. So it made sense for us to do a green burial and just to do it our way. And what I experienced was, you know, again, this is a taboo subject, and people are kind of freaked out by death. And so I'm on a pretty long journey of how to, you know, figure out other cultures and how they do it, because I don't think our culture does a very good job with it. And I'm doing everything I can, every book I can read, you know, every person I can talk to, and I'm open to all sorts of things.
Well, let's pull apart a couple of the threads now that got wound together in your story. But one of them was the conversation you were having about death, and you mentioned green funerals, kind of the way we think about what we do with ourselves after death. Tell us more about that, the notion of sort of our burial practices and how you wanted to examine those.
Yeah, so the practice from most of our culture, I think in America, you go to the hospital, you die, the undertaker takes your body, you have a quick service, you go back to work, and you're expected to perform. You have maybe like one day of bereavement. That is completely not working. And so, you know, and also it's very expensive. You know, you have people that can't make a decision, they can't think, your brain is upside down, and you're expected to buy a $40,000 mahogany casket and the flowers that are $3,000 and the this and the that. And it's ridiculous, in my opinion. And also, you're not really facing the grief when you're not doing it yourself. So we, you know, and our huge amount of friends that were helping us helped us make those decisions. And we already knew about the pine box coffins, and we did it you know, upfront and close. Mm-hmm. And it helped us in our grieving.
It's interesting to think that you would pursue that line. I mean, given the loss of your son, you might expect that, you know, you would take off on themes of drug abuse and prevention and all of that kind of thing. But you stayed with this concept of sort of how we understand death. Why did you stay on that track?
Yeah, so Zafer had just started trying heroin. It was new to him. I didn't know that heroin was a thing. And so there's a lot of good people doing work on that sort of thing. But what I think the deeper issue is that we, as a culture, have holes in our souls, almost everyone, probably everyone. And I think that's what I want to go examine, is how do you fix these holes? How do you fill up these holes in our souls? And for me, it's checking out the other cultures and really digging into spirituality and getting really close to death.
Yeah, and that spirituality around death and the way we, particularly in this consumer culture, think about death is one way in which we let that hole grow bigger and bigger and never examine the root causes that drive us to some of the behaviors that ultimately are destructive.
Absolutely. There's so much addiction and consumerism and screen time, Facebook, whatever, right. Which I'm guilty of some of that. We're upside down trying to figure out how to fill those holes.
Well, you mentioned other cultures and other ways in which people around the world look at death, and it is not the same as we do here in the United States. Joining us now is Pepe Cadillo. He'll be giving a talk at the Death Fair about the Mexican holiday, Dia de los Muertos, which is the Day of the Dead. Pepe, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Fran. An honor to be here.
It's good to have you here. Tell us about the history of the Day of the Dead.
Wow. I guess the short version will be that probably thousands of years ago, with the Aztecs and all those indigenous tribes that were living in Mexico, what is now Mexico, Belize, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, all that Mesoamerica area, they have these rituals to not necessarily celebrate the dead, but to honor the gods, and so they can be more rich, they can have more water, they can grow bigger crops, and so their lives will be more in balance. And so with the time, then the Spaniards came, and so they see that they were sacrificing people, and they didn't like that, basically. So they tried to change those activities into something more human in their perspective. So they kind of start combining what the Aztecs and all these indigenous tribes were doing with what the Christians thought about it. And so at some point, the Spaniards dominate the Aztec culture and all the indigenous culture. So what the Spaniards thought about doing after the people died is what it was maintained. And probably to our days, not that it's better or worse, it's just different. That's how I see it. Nowadays, there has been a lot of syncretism inside of Mexico first, because I think this Mexico might be the strongest country in terms of celebrating the Day of the mm-hmm. Death, as we most people know it. And this combination of elements on how to celebrate the death, it can be seen as what the rural Mexico does and what the urban Mexico does.
Well, can you tell us about some of the traditions? I know they vary widely, but give us some of the most common traditions.
Well, yeah. Well, I would say the rural aspect will be that the celebrations last days rather than hours in the city, right. Because, you know, we can kind of relate very easily to what is the life in city is. So that is one aspect. The other aspect is that everything or most of the things are natural. So you go cut the flowers and take them to the cemetery. And so a lot of the ornaments and food and music is like music, and the food, you cook the food. So it's more handmade than the city. I guess the spirit of the celebration is about the same, but just the means of doing it and the speed that you do it and the how much time the celebration lasts is just different.
And all of this juxtaposed, we would say, against images that are fairly grim, skeletons, images of death that for us look grim.
Yes. Yeah, but everything that you include in this, let's say, the altar of the Day of the Death, for instance, it has a meaning, and there's a reason for those elements to be there. It's not just randomly picked. You get a skull and you put it there. It has a meaning, like the flowers. The smell will guide the soul to come to your place, or you will help them to find what they're looking for in the on the other world. The candles symbolize the light that they will see your house or the altar tonight when they visit you, or you will help them to illuminate the path that they need to follow to until they get to the final destination, whatever that is.
And community is a big part of this. You heard Tammy talk about the number of people who came together, and that's certainly part of Day of the Dead.
Yes, yes, and I think it's growing. I think there's a lot of truth in what you say, Tammy. So people don't know what to do at some point, and they're looking for answers. So I think the Day of the Dead, if nothing else, is really nice to see. It's like visually, it's very, very attractive. So I think it's a good door to start investigating or learning more about these questions that we have on the subject.
We certainly live in a culture today, particularly in this country, that has utterly convinced us that if we're not happy, first of all, that's a crime. Unhappiness is something that should be avoided at all costs. And that if you feel that way, there's something you can buy that will change it. And that is not common to the whole world and certainly not human history. And so it does raise the question about the things we buy at a funeral, the expensive coffins, the expensive flowers, the expensive burial site. And I think as counterpoint and antidote to that, there is a movement now toward green burials. And we'll be talking about, you will be talking about that at the death fair. And one of the people who's going to be talking most about that is Donald Byrne. He is the owner and operator of a green burial company in Chatham County. Don, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here, Frank. Thanks.
Give us an overview of green burial. What are you talking about?
Right. So green burial is a 2016 word for what has gone on for centuries, really. If you think about the traditions that might have happened 200 years ago in our country, a body would have been placed into the ground quickly. There would be no embalming. There might be a simple wooden coffin or perhaps even a plank with a shroud, and there'd be no metal casket, no concrete vault surrounding that. And all of those things happen to be very expensive, and they're things that you can buy. Of course, the Jewish folks and the Islamic faith have done this forever. They never stopped doing green burial. And a lot of families going back to it now are finding that, as Tammy said, wow, what a great way to take an active role in the undertaking and start the healing.
Well, tell us about that. You make coffins, pine coffins. Tell us about them and sort of who buys them.
Right. So about it's about 50-50, Frank. About half of the folks are really interested in the environmentally friendly aspect of it. And the other half are interested in lowering the cost of a family funeral. So those are the two groups that really come to see Piedmont Pine Coffins.
It's interesting to talk about some of these traditions. As you say, what we think of as traditional has not been with us that long. Embalming, for instance, is something that's relatively recent in the last couple hundred years, right?
That's right.
Apart from the ancient Egyptians who, pioneered this process for other reasons, but go ahead. Yeah.
The benchmark is the Civil War in the United States when it was time to get soldiers home from the front to their families in good shape for a funeral. That's when embalming really took off, they say.
So it's interesting because, Tammy, if you think about it, what the Egyptians were up to was this idea of immortality that was embodied in the body of the dead, this idea of keeping the individual with us forever. This is one of the ideas I think that you want to examine, our relationship to ourselves and to our loved ones and to permanence. Is that part of what you're examining here?
Yeah, I mean, there's one book I read where after 400 days, the loved one can turn around and look back on Earth and start helping us. And So I'm planning a party for Memorial Day so that all the friends can come back and we can celebrate. And I think mentally, emotionally, we'll be a lot better off. But yeah, we're seeking all those answers and help and healing.
Tell us about the funeral then that you held on your own property.
Yeah, well, we had an amazing committee. My husband and I basically, again, could not do much but sit and talk and cry and laugh. And so we had a committee of like 20 people that were making conference calls and spreadsheets, and they put together every wish we had, every hope, and honored Zafer in every way. And so we had, you know, the musicians showed up to play, you know, Hallelujah is now our theme song. All of the family members could get up and talk, which I find that amazing. We just had some strength that day. And then my son had this beat up red truck, and that it was kind of an embarrassing truck, and he had given it to his little brother, Arlo. And so we put the pine box coffin in the back of that, much to many people's horror that it wasn't in a hearse. And some people thought it might fall out, and the town shut down. Like, the police and sheriffs just shut the town down. Well, we had about a mile of cars on a processional to go from the service back to our house, where we had a hole dug by my father and others. And we put the coffin in and we sang, and everyone there helped cover Zafer up. And that was awful.
That direct participation. I mean, I think, Don, in some cases, people can build, you send them the parts, they can assemble the coffin, right?
Sure, there you can do it yourself for under $200. Make your own coffin. It's quite easy to do, even for an inexperienced carpenter. Mm-hmm.
And you talked about, Tammy, your family actually creating the grave on your property. This participation is unusual. It's not the thing that we're used to, and it is a direct involvement at a time when people are grieving. How difficult was it? Was it a barrier that you had to sort of? How did you get through that barrier, or was it a barrier?
It just seemed like the thing to do. And I think, you know, I still have a lot of denial, but I think that helps in your denial. If you just have someone, if it's a very sterile situation and you don't have to deal with it, it's going to take you, you know, years and decades to get over it. So we work on it every day. It's a daily practice to work on our grieving and healing.
Yeah, Pepe?
Yes, Frank. I like to make a comment in regards to what the Aztecs used to think about the death and life, that kind of might help somebody, some people, in when they get into this situation. So for the Aztecs, the death was not the end of something. It was the continuation of life, which is a bigger cycle than just life and death. So they thought that actually when you die, you will continue this journey into wherever it is your destination, and they believe that according to how you die, that will be your final destination. But this concept of seeing death as a continuation of life rather than the opposite of life, I think it helps, because we are living in this magical universe full of mysteries, and death might be one of them. And we're always looking for answers. That's fine. And I don't think one culture will have a better answer than the other. It's just you will find the answer that will serve you. Because normally people get, I have talked on this subject to many people, and they normally come to the day of the death, and by the way, I'm Mexican, so I know some things about that, out of need. You know, so they don't look just by chance or because then is something happened, something tragic happened in their lives. So they start looking for the answer. In some cases, that is too late. Like, if you start educating yourself now that you're alive, that you are part of something cosmic, magic, universal, that is bigger than that, I think when we cultivate this idea, it will make the process after our loved ones die, it might be easier to bear it, you know.
That is exactly why we're holding this death fair. And we're attempting two really hard things. We're attempting to study death, and we're also bringing two cultures together. We're partnering with El Vínculo Hispano and you know, just really bringing these two cultures together. We're really excited and scared.
I want to thank all of you for being sharing your fear and your insights with us today. Tammy Schwerin is executive director of the nonprofit Abundance North Carolina, co-sponsoring the Death Fair. Also with us, Pepe Cadillo. He is giving a talk at the Death Fair about the Day of the Dead. And Donald Byrne is co-owner of Piedmont Pine Coffins, a green burial company in Chatham County. All of you, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
The Death Fair takes place Saturday at noon, from noon to midnight in Pittsburgh. We've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. PBS series highlights a tiny town in North Carolina. Find out why in a moment.